Pick your poison. Pick your poison. Do you want a love bomber or someone who barely wants to acknowledge that you are a living, breathing human being? What would you like? Please date me, please. Men are so lonely. Women, you have to date them. These are your two options. Stay lonely, bitch. I don't give a fuck if those are my options.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're on a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back. Okay. We love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for heart-to-hearts and hot gossip, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, who you are meeting at a very Bravo time in my life. It's actually astounding to me how I went from being someone who was a huge movie lover, still am, not saying that's different about myself, I'm just saying that over the last 2 to 3 years, I've been a diehard moviegoer in that I've been at the movie theaters, but in a seat 2 to 4 times a week. Okay. 2 to 4 times a week. I've been in the movie theaters for the last couple of years. And then I was introduced to Bravo. And I do feel that the trajectory of my life has changed dramatically since being introduced to Bravo. Obviously the Pumpcast now exists. If not for Bravo, the Pumpcast, how could you ever have thought of that, right? We're going to do a show about a show that we've never watched because we don't know about Bravo. The best reality TV show that's ever been made. I digress. We'll save that for the Pumpcast. I used to be every day after work, butt in seat in the movie theaters. And now every day at the end of the day, all I want to do is get high and watch Bravo. What happened to me? I don't know, something awesome, something awesome and incredible happened to me. I am having just the time of my goddamn life. This summoned into my brain because I went to a movie premiere last night, and tell me why, in the midst of going to this movie premiere, I was like, fuck, I'm not going to get to watch as much Bravo tonight. I only watched one episode of Winter House after I got back from the premiere. Like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm trying to catch up so I can engage with the people and the Summer House drama that's happening in real time. Like, I'm missing out on drama. You don't understand what this means to me. And honestly, I probably wouldn't even be making this joke if I was a huge fan of the movie I saw last night, but it was just whatever to me. I saw Hokum, some new horror movie from Neon, starring Adam Scott. It was fine. It was just decent, but cool to see Adam Scott in the flesh. That's always cool. Getty photographers do still want me dead, confirmed. Maybe they want me slightly less dead this time around, but I swear to God, every time I go to a red carpet event, I am slaying, I am eating. However, you would never know that if you looked up my name on Getty Images. I just feel like I rarely, if ever, slay on the Getty. Don't know why. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what settings they have on their cameras or why they're holding them so low down, but I have beef with them. I just can't imagine why a photographer is shooting me from like belly button. That seems like not the right place to shoot a person. And I'm 5'3". How the hell are tall people looking good on Getty? I have a lot of questions. And I get that I am someone who can be a little particular about how I like my photos taken. Okay, I have some self-awareness. I understand that I like things done a particular way, that I have a vision that sometimes is not shared by other people, and I just expect other people to have my vision. But I fear I have the right vision. You know, I think I can take a good picture of anyone on the planet. You need a good picture taken of yourself? Ask me. Ask me to do it. I actually feel like when I'm in public and somebody asks me to take a photo of them, like, oh, can you take a photo of me and my friends real quick? I'm like, someone blessed you today. You don't know it yet, but someone blessed you. Someone blessed you by putting me in this space, in this timeline, so that you could ask me to take you and your besties photo, because guess what? I'm going to get you a damn good one. But how come every time I've ever asked a stranger to take a photo of me in public, it's like they are basically either photographing the street and we get the whole floor. It's like my feet start at the middle part of the photograph, and we get so much pavement. Or they which this is my least favorite thing that anyone ever does. I'm like, oh, can you take a photo of me? And then they start squatting. Never do that. Why would you do that? Fee-fi-fo-fum. You're making me fee-fi-fo-fum on the gram, and I didn't ask for that. Underneath? We're shooting me from underneath? Like I'm a monster towering over the city? Like, what are we doing? You're shooting me like I'm the fucking kid in Toy Story that's about to stomp on all the toys. They're fucking terrified of me. Stand the hell up. Shoot me at eye level. Okay? I want that camera at level with my eyes. And if it's not, I'm not going to fuck with it. I'm not going to like the photo. I'm going to think it looks weird. And it's just such a travesty because I slay. But how come nobody knows how to capture the slay? How come everybody is dedicated to undermining my slay? Especially Getty photographers. God. Getty photographers on my beef list always. So needless to say, I didn't get any good photos at the event last night. And I'm pissed about it. And I'm pissed. All right, let's go. Thank God I woke up this morning to four cats running around my apartment because it did alleviate any anger I felt opening up Getty.com and seeing that everyone had betrayed me overnight. I'm fostering a cat family right now. I don't know if I mentioned that in last week's episode, but I just got them 2 days ago. They're here now. And I've never fostered this many cats at once. It's a mom and her three babies. And they are just the cutest, sweetest cats ever. They'll probably run around at some point in today's episode for the visual listeners. Literally, they've been here for 2 days and they are the most social friendly cats ever. They're already, you know, running around the whole apartment, not scared of anything, not scared of me. And I'm obsessed with them. It really, there's something to be said about letting a large quantity of cats run around your apartment because it makes you feel like you are at a cat cafe 24/7. Like I'm here doing my tasks and there's just cats running around all the time. I have to watch where I'm walking because there's probably a cat. And I love that. Like I really, there's something really special about just having a tiny precious thing appear out of nowhere. There's a tiny precious thing appearing out of nowhere right now. Oh, now she's leaving. I can see you though. Hi, honey. Oh my God. I'm just so obsessed. I love them so much. You should never underestimate what hanging out with a bunch of cats will do to your mental health because I'm feeling really good today. I was on Threads this morning. Does anyone use Threads? Hey, what does the audience think about Threads? I can't tell if people are actually on it or not. I just don't use Twitter for obvious reasons. The second Elon Musk got Twitter, I was like, delete, see ya later though. And I'm really happy to not be on Twitter. But sometimes I just like a written medium, you know? Sometimes I'm like, I'm done with the visuals. Everyone stop talking to me. I want silence and I want to read little quips and thoughts and jokes in a quick succession. And I don't feel that I get that on any other platform. So sometimes I do find myself genuinely and earnestly scrolling on Threads. And I saw a thread today, this morning. The thread reads, I'm not fat shaming, but every fat friend I've ever had was miserable. In response, Kendra Austin, one of my favorite voices on the internet, at Kendra Amorous, responded and said, never met a single fat woman who is miserable, but know plenty of thin women who can't enjoy a single second without thinking about what they look like. And that's exactly how I felt about the matter. Like, I truly, and Meg and I talk about this a lot, but when I look back at, like, my teen years, college to now, I'm actually quite grateful in some ways that I have experienced life in this body. Grateful in many ways for experiencing life in this body. But I feel like being fat and experiencing the world as a fat person has changed my perspective in so many ways. And I think the amount of nastiness and judgment that I received as a teenager, in so many ways, I wish I could go back and change that and, you know, soften the world for my teenage self. But in other ways, I feel like it forced me to reckon with a lot of the ways that I saw myself, where I saw my value, how I treated myself, how I allowed other people to treat me. I feel like being fat forced me to reckon and make sense of and have opinions about things that, you know, I see other people still not reckoning with in their 30s, 40s, 50s. Looking at the women I grew up around, the adults that were around me as a child, like my mom and her generation. My mom is very thin. She's been thin my whole life. I have witnessed my mom struggle with her body image my whole entire life. The way I heard my mom and her friends talk about their body image when I was a kid is the same way I hear them talk about it now. They're almost 60. And I've definitely had moments where I've been like, wow, I'm kind of grateful being a fat person and having been forced to reckon with these things and change my perspective and challenge these viewpoints, push against them. Because when you're a fat person living in a world that hates fat people, it's like you either reckon with those things and you challenge those beliefs, or I don't know, you disappear off the face of the earth. Like, I don't know how you could get through the day past a certain point if you don't confront those things. Confront where that hatred comes from, why it is that you feel the things you feel about your body, why we have adopted these standards of what is beautiful and what isn't, and yada yada, and whatever. And I think the older that I've gotten, I said this on an episode recently where there was a time in my life where I thought that everybody would have that reckoning and that moment where they, I don't know, came to blows with their body image and exited being in a more accepting place. And the older that I've gotten, the more I realize that some people will actually never have that reckoning, and some people will literally spend their whole lives hating their bodies and being in constant war with who they are. But to be honest with you, I feel like fat people kind of can't do that past a certain point, or else you'd like never leave your house and you'd just, I don't know, lock yourself in a room until you slowly wither away. The fat women that I'm friends with, the fat women that I look up to, the fat women that I've known throughout my life, past a certain age, they're usually the women that have a better relationship with themselves and are less miserable. But to me, that's because there's kind of a forced moment of reckoning if you live life in a fat body, if you move through the world in a fat body, that is not forced if you're in a thin body, and you can go your whole life without ever reckoning with your own body image because you'll never be forced to. That's my take on it. I saw that tweet and was like, well, that, I don't agree with that. I don't think that makes total sense. It doesn't absolutely check out to me personally. But that's my take on that. Shout out to Kendra Austin, as always, for just being the voice of a generation to me. I'm only going to touch on this briefly because Meg's coming on the podcast next week, and I want to save this conversation for when she's here because she's going to have so much more to say about this, and I am eager to get into all of that with her. But I did see a couple people ask me my thoughts in the box, and I am truly chomping at the bit to talk about this a little bit. But if you follow Meg on TikTok or Instagram, you might have seen a video that she posted recently that really popped off about dating, and the comment section was certifiably fucking insane. There's so much to say there, but Meg opens her TikTok by saying that she thinks that men don't know how to have fun in dating anymore. And the crux of what she's saying is that it seems like there are only two types of daters in the pool right now. There are the people that you meet on day one that are like, all in, let's get married, love bombing 101, just completely disproportionate for the level that you guys know each other, very uncomfortable, so all in on day one. Or option two, the people that barely want to acknowledge your breathing before they stick their penis inside of you. Pick your poison. Pick your poison. Do you want a love bomber or someone who barely wants to acknowledge that you are a living, breathing human being? What would you like? Please date me, please. Men are so lonely. Women, you have to date them. These are your two options. Stay lonely, bitch. I don't give a fuck if those are my options. But Meg's TikTok, she was talking about how there is this secret third option, this middle point in between the whole to marriage pipeline, where we could just, I don't know, go out on dates, see if we vibe, enjoy each other's presence, have a little fun, have a little giggle. We can be kind and sweet to each other without you acting like I'm about to fucking Kathy Bates your ass in Misery. There's been some kind of death in the enjoyment of the process of getting to know someone and the process of dating. It's like people now need the instant gratification of either immediately fucking or immediately being in a relationship, and there's no build up. Dating can be fun, you know? We can totally date like normal people, totally normal people style. Go out on dates, see if we click. We do click. We keep going on dates, enjoying each other's company, being sweet to each other, enjoying whatever amount of time that we do end up dating for. Maybe we only date for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. I don't really give a fuck. Let's just enjoy ourselves while we do it. Why is the option either love bombing or you're mean to me while we fuck? These are bad options. I want neither of them. This is why nobody is fucking or dating anymore. Like, not to expose me and all my bitches, but we're not doing either these days. And it's because this is how people act these days. It's like dating has become so transactional. It's so like the instant gratification of what can I get out of this interaction. And if you look at the comment section of Meg's video, it's scary. Oh, girl. It is scary. Spooky, scary, shiver up the spine in that comment section. In my opinion, I think it was largely overtaken by red pillars. Don't read that comment section and think that that's how most people are. I actually don't think that's how most people are, but it is a significant enough chunk of the dating pool that it's noticeable. Even non-red pillars do act like this, but I do think that comment section is, you know, something to shield your eyes at best. Truly at best something to shield your eyes at. I reposted it obviously because Meg and I have talked about this 100,000 times, and that's my girl. She's brilliant and she said everything perfectly. Repost. And again, I'm really trying not to get into this too much because we are definitely going to talk about this next week when Meg comes on, but there are men in the comments of that video being like, oh, so you want me to enjoy your company while I'm competing against other men and spending all of this money in the process? Like, obviously dating isn't fun. Why would anyone want to do this? What? Hey, what? You're so perturbed at the idea that we should just enjoy each other's company and go on dates. And you have this very warped vision of what's going on during the process of that. It is very strange to me that men see the act of dating as being a competition. That I find very strange. To me, when I think about dating inside my head, when I am going on dates with someone, there is no competition, babe. I don't know who the fuck you're competing with. Like, number one, when I am dating someone, when I go into a date with someone new, to me, I am just assessing whether or not we're a match, whether or not we have fun together, whether or not our lifestyles are compatible, what we want out of life and a relationship is compatible. You're not competing with anyone or against anyone. It's simply just a matter of figuring out our compatibility and if we enjoy spending time together and if we could enjoy spending more time together. I don't know why anyone would be concerned about who the competition is or if there is any competition. I think you guys are way too concerned about the potential other men that could be in this dynamic. That's number one. And number two, and this isn't true for everyone, but I do feel that this is true for a lot of people, myself included. But with what time do you think I'm dating a whole fucking team of people for you to compete against? Do I look like someone who has a bunch of fucking free time to date 8 people at once? No, no. Do some people do the roster of it all? Yeah, some people do treat dating like a full-time job. Do I think most people do? No. I've been on 2 dates this year, dude. 2, kind of 1-2. I don't have the time to be dating all these people for you to hypothetically compete against because, like I said, in reference to point number one, that's just not how I view dating as a person. Fundamentally, that is not how I see it. But even if it was, with what goddamn time am I dating all these hypothetical people that you're competing against? This is a made-up universe that you live in. A complete made-up world. And also, the competition of it all makes it seem like you are competing to claim me in some way. Which I don't like, to be honest with you. I don't like the idea of, like, the pursuit of finding your companion, finding someone who you love, being like ready, set, mark your engines, go type of thing, where everyone's like gunning towards something and you want to win, you want to claim, you want to get to the finish line, you want to have me. Like, I don't like that. I believe in love. Some of you just aren't fucking romantics. Is that what it comes down to? Like, to me, that's such a strange transactional way to view dating. I want to spend my time, I want to spend my life with people I enjoy the company of. I don't care if that lasts 1 month, 2 months, a year, 2 years, forever. Like, I don't really give a shit. I also think maybe this also connects to people's just like idea of the timelines for their life, timelines for marriage, and like running towards those timelines. I talked a little bit on Patreon and maybe on this show about how I've been thinking a lot about how I don't know if I ever want to have a wedding anymore. I think I might be more of a courthouse wedding with just the immediate family and besties kind of vibe. And even more recently, I've been like, do I even want to get married? Today's episode is brought to you by Vinted. I feel like I am in a constant state of trying to clean out my wardrobe and make space in my apartment. These New York closets are no joke. You've really got to be choosy about what clothes you're bringing in and what pieces have got to go. And Vinted really came into my life at the exact right time because Vinted is a secondhand app that makes it easy for everyday sellers, people like you and me, to sell pre-loved fashion and earn some extra money in the process. When I'm cleaning up my closet, whether it's because an item doesn't quite fit me right anymore or it's just not my style, I always feel better about moving on knowing that my pre-loved clothes are going to be loved again by someone else. My own personal rule is that if a full year, all four seasons pass me by and I don't go to reach for an item of clothing, it's going on Vinted. It's super easy to list your clothes and there's absolutely no selling fees, so you keep everything that you earn. It feels so good to have a less cluttered closet and successfully close my drawers without shoving things in, crossing my fingers, and just hoping that they fit. And Vinted is free to download. So not only are there no seller fees and you get to keep everything that you earn, but the app is completely free to download. It's so simple. Once an item sells, Vinted creates the prepaid shipping label for you. You literally have no excuse not to sign up and start listing your pre-loved items on Vinted today. See what's hiding in your closet. You might be surprised how much you can earn with Vinted. Download the Vinted app for free to start listing with no seller fees. My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read, but what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot. Literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay. You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight, but then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com. I don't know anymore. And I think the truth that I'll settle on eventually is probably somewhere in the middle, where it's not that I don't want to get married. It's that I don't care if I don't get married. And to me, I don't necessarily think about my life and my future as being like, I have to get married and I have to find this person. And if I don't, you know, the race is just ongoing. I'm just constantly in hot pursuit, trying to find this person to win, to claim, to whatever. That is not how I think life should be. And I would rather spend my days with people that I enjoy the company of, no matter how fleeting or how long. And if, let's say, I end up in a 10-year long relationship, and then at the end of those 10 years, we decide that we've just grown into different people and it doesn't make sense anymore, we go our separate ways, and then I'm single until I'm 55, and then I find someone else, and we're together for 15 years, and then I'm 70 and I'm single, and maybe at that point I'm like, you know what, who gives a shit? I'm just going to go buck wild bananas. And I'm single for the rest of my life. And who gives a shit? Like, marriage is not the thing that means anything to me. It's companionship. It's finding someone that you love and riding that wave for however long makes sense. I don't care to shove myself or the people I claim to love into these boxes where we have to be, the same people forever. If we change, we change, and that's totally fine. And maybe we change and we're not good for each other anymore, and that is okay. And so part of me thinks that my general outlook on companionship and partnership also impacts the way I see this, because I'm like weirded out by the idea of someone thinking that it's a competition or trying to be in hot pursuit of anything or win something, claim me. Like, I want to find a partner. I want to find someone to like truly merge with and love and be just a lot sweeter with than that. That is so bizarre. It's just like not a very emotional way to view dating, which is an inherently very emotional thing. You're not going to take dating from the lovers, okay? That's us. Loving, that stays here. If you're going to turn dating into a fucking checklist, then that's on you. If you're going to turn dating into this absolutely emotionless transaction and then get pissed off when it's unenjoyable, like, I think you're creating your own problem. You know what I mean? And then the money aspect of it, which to me is a complete fucking fairy tale. Now, I think that's something that usually comes from the mouth of these more annoying right-wing, maybe red pill ass dudes who like to pretend like they live in this world where women don't pay for anything and are just mooching off of men, and that dating is the most expensive thing in the world because you have to like fund a woman's lifestyle in order to make that happen. I find that to be kind of silly and not real. When I look at my own experiences, when I look around at my friends and all the beautiful, wonderful, successful, capable women that I know, I don't know a single woman that expects the person she's dating to fund her lifestyle. I don't know anyone who gives a fuck about the price of dates that they go on. I don't know anybody personally where money is something that is even in a top five priority when dating. Now, that's not to say that money has no impact on dating. Absolutely, it does. But I believe it's a far smaller impact than men choose to believe that it is. When I go on dates, I always split everything down the middle unless they offer to pay for me. It's very kind when someone offers to pay for me. I don't expect it by any means, because I am a person that exists in the world, and I know that money is tight for a lot of people right now and everything is getting more expensive. There's no universe where I would expect anyone to pay my way and cover me. I know that things are tight. I just don't see money like that, and I would never expect that of someone else. I am more than happy to pay my own way. And to be honest with you, usually I make more money than the people that I go out with. And I kind of see money and, you know, money in the context of dating to be something that just sort of evens out in the wash. Date one, we go out to drinks. Maybe my date covers it. On date two, I'm always going to be the one that offers to pay. That's just how I roll. That's how I am. This is how I would operate with friendships. This is how I operate in dating. I don't believe in keeping a ledger and like keeping track of who's paying more for this or for that. Like, I believe in love and exploring partnership with another person. There should be an appropriate split of things dependent on the situations that you're in. And obviously in early stage dating, maybe you're not talking about that, but still, I really don't believe that most people expect anyone to pay or are going to be mad if you guys split it. I don't personally know anyone that would be mad about that. I'm not saying that there aren't people out there that would be mad, for sure. But for me and for all the women that I am in community with, I know that that is not true. It's nice when someone pays for me. I by no means expect it. At the end of the day, I value someone taking initiative and being sweet to me over anything else. We could go on a walk in the fucking park, and you showing up with a handwritten note to me is going to woo me more than an expensive dinner ever could. I fear this is obvious, though. And I just feel like men always fixate on the money side of things. And they act like money is the thing that you use to impress a woman. But I don't know a single woman who would be impressed by that, personally. Not saying there aren't women in the world who are very materialistic in that way. But I'm talking about the average woman. That's not the take. And I just feel like a lot of it's made up. It's like these people who have never dated a woman before are on the internet like, oh yeah, all women care about is money, and I dating isn't fun because I have to pay hundreds of dollars to impress them. It's like, no, you don't. Did another man tell you that? Probably. I think if you ever talked to a woman, you would learn that's not true. I don't know. I think it's scary. Like, send a shiver up my spine. Chills. Scary. The way that some of these people view dating and relationships as being like so utterly transactional and emotionless. As if the idea of finding someone to fall in love with and maybe spend your life with isn't the most emotional thing. How are you trying to do that with no emotion? Have you considered that you could have the wrong approach? Like, what? I don't know. I don't know, and also I don't care. And I am mostly out of the dating pool until whatever is going on in there gets solved. You know, it's like learning that there's an issue at the public pool and it's a little funky and a little weird over there. And you're like, you know what? I'll just probably take a pass this year and I'll wait till whatever's going on over there gets fixed. I've been on 2 dates this year. I had a great time on both of them, actually. So things looking good for me, I guess. But I'm not currently seeing anyone and I'm not actively dating right now. Maybe I'll go on another date soon. Who knows? Maybe I won't. Who knows? it's just not a priority of mine. And I'm at this point in my life taking an approach of like, we'll see what happens. You know, I happen to cross paths with someone that I click with. I'm very on and off of dating apps, as I've mentioned. So maybe during my next stint on dating apps, I match with someone that I want to go out with. We see what's happening there. I don't know. I really don't care. And it's because there's something weird happening. There's something very strange happening. And I'm just, yeah, I'm not going to be a lover girl dating all of these people who see the process of dating as being something completely and utterly void of human touch and feeling. That's just not how I roll. It's like, my life is too full of love and companionship and joy with the people that are already in it. I'm not going to fuck up my vibe just to like have sex with someone. I want to have sex with someone who like adds to the vibe and makes what is already a beautiful life even more sweet and sexy and fun. Not someone who is like a black hole to all of the joy and companionship and love that I do have in my life with my platonic relationships. Like, it just is not that important to me. I have like 20 vibrators. We'll be fucking okay. You know what I mean? And as I was reflecting on this, I was thinking about a video. This is Boots, by the way. Well, that's not actually his name. I don't know. I can't tell the kittens apart. They all kind of look the same, except for this one, because she has boots on all of her boots. I call all cats she. The mom's name is Origami, and the kittens are technically Cootie Catcher, Crane, and Paper Plane. But again, I cannot tell them apart. So I've been calling this one Boots because I can tell her apart from the other two. The other two are literally twins, though. Hi, Boots. Hi. Hi, honey. Oh, you are gorgeous, girl. You are just gorgeous. But as I was reflecting on this, I was reminded of a video that I saw recently that is honestly entirely unrelated to this. But it was a woman, a mother, talking about an interaction that her daughter had on the playground recently. Again, totally unrelated, but it brought up something for me just remembering it. But it was a mom talking about an experience her daughter had on the playground where they were at some event and her daughter was playing with this group of kids. They were having a good time. They were holding hands. They were playing together. They were laughing. And suddenly another kid came over and convinced the other kids to stop playing with her daughter and just kind of turned them against her and, you know, the standard like kid bullying shit where all of a sudden all the kids are like, no, we don't want to play with you. We don't want to play with you. And her daughter was really confused and hurt at first. And her mom pulled her aside and was like, you know, we don't hang out in places where we're not welcome, where we're not completely loved and celebrated. So let's go over here for a second and let's talk. And her daughter is understandably very upset because these kids are being mean to her on the playground after she was just having a good time with them. And that's hard for a child to reckon with, being like, well, 5 minutes ago we were holding hands and laughing and running around together and now they don't want to play with me. Like, what did I do? What did I do wrong? And her mom was like, you didn't do anything wrong. This is nothing to do with you or what you did. We cannot control what other people do. And all you have to know is that you are only supposed to be in spaces where you are loved and celebrated and feel comfortable and safe and, you know, overjoyed. And the second we realize that a space, a group of people is not giving us that safety and comfort, then we have to walk away because we don't deserve that. And that's a sign that that's not where we're supposed to be. And then, you know, she's sitting with her daughter asking her to talk about some of her other friends from school that do make her feel safe and comforted and warm and loved and all these things. And by the end of the conversation, her daughter's feeling happy again. She ends up going back to the playground, finding other kids to play with, and it all works out. At the end of the day, they have this like beautiful moment of reflection before bed and whatever. It was a sweet video from this mother. I honestly don't know where I saw that or when I saw that. It was definitely within the last week. I would link it if I could, but I truly have no idea where I would even find that video now. But as I was thinking about all of this, I was also thinking of that video and this like general frame of mind that this mom was teaching her daughter. And I think dating for a lot of people used to be kind of the opposite of that, where people would, myself included, find themselves in situations with people who did not respect them, who were very transactional with them, who didn't see them or treat them like a human being, who made them feel like they were too much for feeling something or wanting to be treated sweetly in the process of dating, because that's fucking normal. And at some point in your life, you have this realization of like, actually, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be around people who don't make me feel as beautiful and wonderful as the other people in my life. I reached a point where I was like, all of the relationships in my orbit fill me with so much joy. I have good relationships with my family. I have good relationships with so many of my friends. I love what I do for work. I love the animals I surround myself with. I love my home. I love the city I live in. Like, I have so many beautiful things in my life. And then I would look at my dating life and I'd be like, God, you just suck. You're not fun to be around. You don't make me feel good. You make me feel self-conscious. You make me feel like I'm too much for wanting someone to act like they're excited to see me and like put effort into getting to know me. I feel like I have to suppress who I am in order to date you. I need to make myself smaller so as to not overwhelm you It's just not fun. It's not me. I don't get to be the same me that I am around family, around friends, all the other corners of my life that are fucking fabulous. Like, I feel like I meet these people that make me feel like I can't even be that person. So then I stopped dating because I was like, this just isn't fun anymore. I don't want to do it. I only want to be places and around people that make me feel safe and comfortable and loved and that treat me with the same kind of sweetness that I treat them. And if you don't do that, then see ya. I have no interest in it. And so as a result, obviously, over the last 5 years of my life, I have dated significantly less than I did in my early 20s. And I don't know why it is that dating is so difficult now. And I do think that social media and our phones and dating apps and technology in general has a lot to do with it. I think it depends a lot on where you live. New York is famously like one of the most non-committal cities ever. Politics also play a role here. Like, there are so many things that go into why dating is like miserable right now. But I also believe that part of why dating is so miserable right now is because so many people have an aversion to feeling, have an aversion to living emotionally. And dating is very emotional. And I think to try to make dating transactional and to make it emotionless and void of feeling is like, of course, it fucking sucks. Of course it fucking sucks. And now, obviously, I have far fewer dating experiences. I've been on 2 dates this year. Had a great time on both. Ultimately, we're not my person. We're looking for different things in different stages of our lives, just not a complete and total match. But both of those people were very kind. Maybe we'll reconnect in the future if things do align. Either way, I had a great night. I met a fun person that I had great conversation with. Sometimes things just don't work out. That's totally fine. I want to have fun in the process of that. Even if it's just for one night, I would rather have an awesome, fun night with a new person where we do have an emotional night together because we are dating, we are going on a date together, versus going to a bar and like pretending I'm not that into someone that I am trying to go on a date with because they're trying to nonchalant themselves into having sex with me that night. Or on the opposite side of the spectrum, someone's love bombing the fuck out of me, trying to like move in with me at the end of date one. Like, we've gotta, everyone has to calm down. Everyone, be normal challenge. So those are my initial thoughts. We'll revisit this next week when Meg is here, but God, that comment section is insane. Go take a look at what's inside of that for your homework before next week. I had a reflection yesterday as I was coming home from that movie I told you about. It was a horror movie. And I don't know what triggered this reflection. It smells like something's burning. Not in my apartment. Nope. Me checking my toaster to make sure I didn't mysteriously put more toast in there, even though I've been sitting in my bed for the last hour. But when I was coming home from this movie premiere last night, I was thinking about how I really feel like I have almost like a fear around grief now. And I don't know if this is just a part of grief and sort of like processing and all of that. Would love to hear from other grievers of any variety what your experience with having a fear around grief is. But I feel now that I think and worry about the people and animals that I love dying more than I ever did before Mango died. Obviously, I've talked on this show ad nauseum about how Mango's passing impacted me and how it continues to impact me. It rocked my world. It turned so much upside down for me. And those first couple weeks were agonizing. I can't even describe to you the way I felt in my body. It was so bad. I remember laying here in bed just feeling like I had lost truly the thing I loved most in the whole world. And it was such a horrible feeling, and having to go to bed and then wake up in the morning and have it hit you all at once. It was like just the worst thing ever. And I'm so lucky to be someone who has so many people in my life that I love an absolutely immeasurable amount. But now I find myself being so scared constantly about the next time I will experience grief, because that's a promise. I will experience more grief in life. To be alive is to experience grief. With life comes death, and with love comes loss, and there's nothing we can do to separate these things, and such is life. But I genuinely have felt like plagued with fear over the next time I'll experience grief. And you would think that you would almost over time start to feel like more equipped. Like, okay, I've been through it. I've felt this way before. I know how to feel it again. I don't feel that way at all. And I think the reason I was thinking about it after coming back from this movie is because I was like, it almost feels like when you're watching a horror movie and you'd think that like after the first jump scare, you're like, okay, I know what to expect. I know who might pop out. I know there's a witch or a ghost or a whatever on the other side of the door, and they're going to come back, and you're like, okay, I'll brace myself for it. I'm prepared now. I won't jump as much the next time because I know it's coming. Every time without fail, though, I will jump at the next jump scare just as much as I did the one before. And I feel scared the whole time I'm watching a scary movie. And I'm just like waiting to be scared again. And I'm, you know, my friends know, but when I watch scary movies, I love them. And I really, horror has always been one of my favorite genres, but I do sit in the theater the whole time, like with my hands like this, just like cringing and waiting for when the next thing is going to happen. And I am a very jumpy person. And so I was thinking about this on the way home from the theater and how, like, no matter how many times I've seen scary movies, I will be just as scared at the next one. And even within the same movie, no matter how many different jump scares happen in that movie, I will be just as scared at every single one of them. And maybe this is a weird comparison to make with grief, but that's kind of also how I've been feeling about grief, where I don't feel more prepared to experience more grief. I don't feel stronger. I don't feel less scared. If anything, I actually feel more scared. And I think about it way more. And I'm really, truly terrified of losing anyone that I love and having to feel that horrible feeling again. And just knowing that, yeah, one version of your life is gone. And it, like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, you want to live in the moment and be present and soak everything in and look around you and take in all the people you love and remember to call everyone and keep in touch and carve out time and just do everything perfectly for everyone. And I get really scared. Like, what if I don't? How can I soak in every moment that I have with people now and somehow have that help me in my time of grief? Like, I actually don't think that I think that I'm going to be decimated no matter what. And I'm just like terrified about it. And like, I don't know, the something about like live every day like it's the last, that like frame of mind doesn't feel comforting to me. It actually brings me a great amount of stress and fear because I'm like, okay, so I have to soak everything in right now, and I have to always be my best self in all of my relationships because God knows what can happen, and I'm going to be a shell of a person no matter when it happens or what happens or whatever. I'm scared. I'm actually truly scared for when my next encounter with grief will be, and it actually is fucked up that we all have to experience it. Like, it just is excruciating. I also find myself being like so much more emotional hearing about other people's losses. I'm like watching Summer House and Carl's brother dies in season 5, I think. I was like sobbing. You never meet Carl's brother on the show. Carl is not, you know, especially a character on the show that I really resonate with. But hearing about his loss, just like, I'm like sitting here sobbing. And I've always been a very sensitive person and I cry a lot. Guilty, okay, I'm a Pisces. But I just feel that after losing Mango, seeing other people grieving, hearing about other people's grief, other kinds of loss, other kinds of grief, it all just impacts me so much deeper than it did before. Not that it didn't impact me before. Of course it did. But it just, yeah, I don't know. I get like really scared about it and like fixated on it. I probably need to talk to my therapist about this because I just feel like it's becoming something that I'm like, I can't stop thinking about it. And I get very scared about it. I've kind of suspected for a little bit that I might have OCD, and I don't know. Again, these are questions for my therapist and psychiatrist, not for the podcast. Don't answer those questions. None of you are qualified to answer that question for me. But if you yourself have dealt with this kind of, I don't know, fear of grief or just like heightened fear of loss after becoming more intimate with grief in your own lives, I'd love to know what your experience has been or if you resonate with that and sort of what your learnings or reflections with it have been, because I feel overwhelmed with fear about it sometimes. And I don't know that there's anything that we can really do about that. I don't know. Sometimes being alive is very scary to me. With that, I'm going to throw us on over to the Patreon post show. Obviously it's May now, which means the fourth installment of my poetry art print club is happening. So if you're interested in receiving a poem written by me with a piece of art made by me via 5x7 postcard in the mail over the next couple weeks, sign up for the Patreon sensitive and romantic tiers. Not only do you get all this bonus content, access to our Discord server, access to the monthly live streams, you also get a bi-monthly poetry art print by me, a little collectible, a little piece of snail mail from my heart to yours. So if you're interested in that, if you want to join and receive the May postcard, be sure to join the Patreon by the end of the day on May 5th at the latest to receive for May. If you join after that, the next print you will receive is in July. I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for watching. And I will see you in next week's episode when Meg is here as a guest. So fill that submission box with all of your thoughts and feelings and questions that you want both Meg and I to weigh in on. Love you guys so much. See you next week.